Chapter 11. Riding the Highway. Every year since 1976, Cash hosted a Christmas special for TV. The first one, Johnny Cash at Home, featured various sites around Hendersonville, including the house of Cash and his farm, Bonacqua. Guests included Roy Clark, Tony Orlando, Merle Travis, Barbara Mandrell, and Billy Graham. Subsequent specials were filmed either at studios or partly on location: Israel, 1977, Scotland, 1981, and Memphis, 1982. In 1984, the special aired from Switzerland, where Cash ended a 10-date tour in Europe. His special guests, Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, Kris Kristofferson, Tony Wine, Connie Nelson, and Jesse Coulter, flew in and stayed at the Montreux Palace Hotel on Lake Geneva. At the press conference, the inevitable question was asked: why a Christmas special from Montreux? What was the significance? "Because this is where the baby Jesus was born," deadpanned Waylon. The special in Montreux laid the groundwork for a country music supergroup made up of Cash, Kris Kristofferson, Willie Nelson, and Waylon Jennings, later known as the Highwaymen. The music producer for the TV show, Chips Moman, had, in October, begun recording an album with Cash in Nashville. "We were passing the guitar around, and John asked Willie why he had made duet records with everyone in the business but him, and suggested that they should do one," says Kristofferson. Willie said that, "If that happened, I should be there to pitch songs because, although Willie wasn't wild about my voice, he loved my songs." The idea of the country supergroup may have come and gone had Cash not recorded Willie's song, "They're All the Same," 3 weeks after returning to the States. The next day, he cut Kristofferson's "Here Comes That Rainbow Again." While still at Moman's Nashville studio, Willie and Kristofferson, on the spur of the moment, called in Waylon to cut some tracks with them. Backing them were some of Nashville's most experienced session musicians, including keyboard player Bobby Emmons and guitarist Reggie Young. Before Christmas, the quartet had recorded 10 songs, including Highwayman, a 1977 song by singer-songwriter Jimmy Webb that they'd played together informally in Switzerland. "One thing led to another, and the next thing we knew, we had an album," says Willie Nelson. "Then we found ourselves playing together on stage and having a lot of fun. We are all fans of each other's work, and that's why I loved it. I could stand on stage with three guys I really admired and respected and listen to them perform." The resulting album, Highwayman, and the title single both topped the country charts in 1985. Work on Cash's album Rainbow was temporarily suspended, first for Highwayman and then for Heroes, an album of duets with Waylon, which Moman also produced. They didn't pick back up on Rainbow until after their debut concert at Willie's Picnic, an annual concert and cookout in Austin, Texas. Almost immediately after the final session, Cash returned to Sun Recording Studio for the first time in 27 years to record The Class of 55, a nostalgic album with Carl Perkins, Roy Orbison, and Jerry Lee Lewis that was released by Polygram. Another reason Rainbow took so long to produce was that Columbia had lost faith in Cash as a solo artist. By playing with the Highwaymen, he received some much-needed attention and even sold some other albums. Released without any promotion, Rainbow consequently died a quiet death. When interviewed years later, Chips Moman was convinced that it had never been released. Kris Kristofferson, who had two songs covered on it, has still never heard it. He was particularly puzzled when he read that Cash called "Here Comes That Rainbow Again," the song that gave the album its title, his favorite song, when, as far as Kristofferson knew, he had never recorded it. "The album was released, but Columbia buried it," says Lou Robin. Rick Blackburn, who was running the company in Nashville, was not interested in the stuff that John was doing, and he was acting like judge, jury, and executioner. "When I sent him the final mixes, he probably put out 20,000 records, which is like one in every record store. It certainly wasn't going to be promoted." By this time, Ray Cash had become seriously ill. Confined to his home in Hendersonville, he had almost completely lost his sight. Cash did a few scattered shows but managed to stay nearby much of the time, making the film The Last Days of Frank and Jesse James with Kristofferson and Waylon in and around Nashville. Ray Cash had mellowed over the years, and the tough drinker who had done so much to belittle his son was gone. He, now without pretense, summoned his children and grandchildren to pray and sing gospel songs to him on his deathbed. He was very sincere, says his daughter Joanne. He asked us with tears. I feel assured in my heart that he made things right with God. On December 23rd, at the age of 88, Ray Cash died. Courtney Wilson officiated at the funeral, which took place at First Baptist Church in Hendersonville. His gravestone held the same question engraved over his son Jack's final resting place. Will you meet me in heaven? Cash had ambiguous feelings about his father's passing. On the one hand, he had lost a man from whom he had inherited so much of his temperament. But on the other hand, he was now finally free of the man responsible for so much of his self-doubt. While he was alive, Cash showed his father nothing but the greatest respect, almost as if honor thy father and mother was the one commandment he was determined not to break. He never spoke publicly about his father's violence, verbal abuse, or drunkenness. Instead, he always appeared to go out of his way to shower his father with praise for his hard work, sacrifice, exemplary military service, and love of country. Whenever Cash introduced the song These Hands on stage, he always dedicated it to his father. A decade later, when he wrote his autobiography, Cash, he made the startling confession that he rarely thought about his father anymore. And even though he passed the cemetery where his father was buried almost every day, he didn't visit his father's grave any longer. He told how his father never praised him until he became a star, and even then he never brought himself to tell Cash that he loved him. Cash revealed some of his violent behavior but made a point of remarking, he never laid a hand on Jack or me either. His father ruled supremely in the home. Questioning his behavior constituted insubordination. The father was a pretty strong personality, says Saul Holliff. I would say that Johnny was always intimidated by him. The abuse was a source of the pain that Cash was always trying to heal, but he learned things from his father, like respect for elders and love of his country, that he desired to emulate. However, Cash was determined to be different with his own children. He avoided violent punishments, praised them endlessly, and often professed his love. He preferred to correct their behavior by talking with them or writing them letters, even when they lived in the same house. Asked in 1979 how he'd like to be remembered in 100 years, he said simply, I'd like to be remembered as a good daddy. Cash felt guilty that he hadn't been around as his girls grew up and worried that his behavior had negatively affected them. By 1986, three of his daughters had already been married and divorced. For a short time, he regularly sent questionnaires that required them to search through the Bible for answers. I think it always bothered him that he had made some mistakes, says Tara. Looking back, I think that sending us these questions was a really sweet way of trying to get us to pay attention to what he was trying to show us. John Carter was the main beneficiary of his improved parental skills, not only because he was taken on the road from earliest childhood and so enjoyed the company of both his parents, but also because Cash was able to do everything with him, from playing with toys on the living room floor to hiking in the woods and taking fishing trips in Alaska.